Welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. She's a slightly worse for wear than Emma Bunnell.
I went to the theatre last night. It was great.
She went to the theatre. I thought it was going to be celebrating two more stonking Labour by-election wins.
If I'd still been drinking by the time the by-election results came in, we would not be recording a podcast this morning.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. I'd have woken up to a message sent at 5 a.m. going, Charlotte. Yeah. Which is, I mean, to be fair, some of the messages between us do essentially boil down to that. So it's fine. Let's break down these two by-election victories. Wellingborough, that was in Northamptonshire. That's Peter Bone's former seat. Overturned a majority of over 18,000. Over in Kingswood in South Gloucestershire, overturned 11,220 Conservative majority seat, used to be held by Chris Skidmore. That was the seat, if I'm not misremembering, where people were a bit annoyed he'd stood down in a by-election, weren't they? That was the sort of net zero-y...
They were. He stood down. So rather than going, I can't take the Conservative whip anymore, but my seat's literally being abolished, so putting people through a by-election is a bit dirty of me, because there's going to be a general election this year.
Right.
He went, I can't take the Conservative whip anymore, and I don't want to be an MP, and I'm gone. Now, look, in terms of personal, you can't force someone to stay an MP.
No, and you also obviously wouldn't want someone not committed to that role, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because it's a bit of a grueling...
I mean, you get a lot of them.
Yes, we have encountered such people, yes. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You can't just let it peter out for... I get that, but the Conservative Party was a... Members of the Conservative Party and his fellow MPs were not best impressed by that.
No.
I guess we should, though, start properly in Wellingborough, because that is a stonking win.
It's the second biggest by-election win after Dudley West in 1994.
I thought it... I mean, it is huge. I thought it was the record, actually.
No, it's not quite the record. The Dudley West pips it slightly.
It was a huge... It's a huge swing towards Labour. So the MP for that will be Jen Kitchen now.
Who is 28.
Oh, for goodness. Right. Thank you so much for listening to House of Comments. We'll never see you again. Because we'll just be drinking tea in a retirement home or something. That's disgraceful.
You keep calling it tea, Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely disgraceful. I've already got it in for her. No, it's a huge win because it's turned 18,540 Conservative majority into 6,436 Labour majority. And I saw this point being made online, and I think it possibly is the most important one today. We all woke up to this news and were not surprised by it. And I think that is the most deadly thing for the Conservatives.
Yes. The Conservatives are on their way out. They are arguing amongst themselves about what that way out is. So Tim Montgomery, who set up, I believe, Conservative Home.
Yes, that's right.
Has said, it's all over for Tories, absolutely over. We didn't do what we said we'd do and did the things we said we wouldn't. The longer Sunak delays the election date, the angrier the electorate are going to get. Tim is very much of the school that the Tories aren't nearly Tory enough. Frankly, I think they're being smacked about for being way, 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 way too Tory.
Well, keep going, because we've got to come to that in a related point.
But I mean, this is what's fascinating is the Tories already having this fight amongst themselves. Like, why have we lost the general election? Like, we technically haven't fought it yet. But they are in such a mess. And even their moderate wing, and this is what my newsletter is going to be about this week, their moderate wing is far from moderate. There are no centrist Tories left.
I suspect Damien Green and the One Nation wing of the party would be pretty cross at you for saying that.
I'm sure they would, but they can be as cross with me as they like. They are leaning in to all of the worst elements of Toryism. Their champion, their prime minister, is salting the earth. They know they're losing the election, and all they're doing with their last year in government is making it as hard as possible for Labour to make things better for political reasons.
Labour certainly putting that argument, because that's, of course, was part of the argument when we discussed that £28 billion green infrastructure spending. That was very much what the narrative was being set up as.
But I mean, it doesn't, you don't even, like, take out Labour being a bit wimpy, which they totally are, and I'm not standing up for Labour on that.
No, we did the show last week.
The way that Hunt is putting very clear signals. Now, he might end up not doing it. If he doesn't do it, I will say so on this podcast. Mm-hmm. But he's talking about significant austerity levels of public sector cuts to things like prisons, because they're clearly going so well, in order to fund tax cuts.
Prisons are under a lot of strain.
And all of the things that he would put in would come in after an election. So the idea is it's literally the medieval concept of salting the earth.
Yeah. Labour has, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I think there's been stuff that Labour's done that, incoming Conservative governments have also had to wind back. It's a pretty classic
trend. No, it's so hard for them to live with the Equalities Act.
That's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about economic stuff. But yes, this is a sort of classic political trick. It's not big and it's not clever. Let's go back to the results, because you made a point about you thought the Conservatives were getting punished for being sort of too conservative. Big C, not small C, I think. Which brings us to the Reform Party, who are obviously trying to cash in on the opposite narrative of sort of they're not doing what they said they would do. So in Wellingborough, the Reform Party got 13%.
Absolutely. There is definitely a percentage of Tories who don't think the Tories are Tory enough.
Exactly.
And are voting for reform. But
Kingswood,
you know who won that election? Labour.
Right. This is the point. And in Kingswood, the Reform got 10.4%. And who won that election?
Labour.
Right. And this, of course, is going to be the narrative. This is the only way, I think, that the Conservatives can hold off reform, or have any chance of holding off reform, which is to say a vote for reform is a vote for Labour.
Well, I mean, they can. The problem is reform have more of an incentive to kill off the current Conservative Party as they exist than they have to allow them to limp on.
Yeah, so I think Kingswood is the Telegraph have broken this down, and it shows that Kingswood, which is near Bristol, not exactly,
It's an outer suburb of Bristol, isn't it?
Right, it's not exactly prime, what you would think of in cliched terms as prime reform territory, but they got 10.4% of the vote. That put them in third place, because it was Conservatives, Labour 44.9, Conservatives 34.9, Reform 10.4, which was 2000.
In many ways, they're the new Lib Dems, aren't they? They're none of the above party.
Let's break down the numbers, because the majority in Kingswood was 2,501. How many votes did Reform get? 2,578. They basically gave the seat to Labour.
I think that I think that's too presumptive.
I don't think
everybody who voted Reform, if Reform hadn't been on the ticket, would have voted Tory. I don't think that any of the polling bears that out.
That's a fair point, because we know that it's a fair point, because Reform is not only picking up votes from the Conservative.
They're not only picking up votes from Conservatives. Those Conservative voters might have just stayed at home.
Sure.
There is always in British politics, and particularly in our very anti-politics mood that we're in at the moment, a decent turnout for the not the guys who's going to win party.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it is presumptive, and you're right to pull me up on it, that everyone who votes Reform would have voted Conservative.
There will be elements on the Tory right who will make exactly the point you're making, because they want to pull the Tories ever further to the right.
Oh, I think it's going to
And
be a huge
even
part
the
of the narrative.
misnomer that is the Tory right, as if Rishi Sunak was some sort of mad left winger, or even a centrist. But you know, the thing about parties having wings is that even when your more centre-oriented wing is as right-wing as our current setup, it just pushes your right wing from Priti Patel to Suella Braverman.
What I'm wondering now is, so I've got the numbers up in front of me, whether your point is right or wrong, and I think you, as I say, you were right to slightly pull me up on that everyone of those 2,578 Reform voters would have voted Conservative. There is zero doubt that the quote unquote, I suppose, four of the quote unquote five families or whatever of the
Oh,
Conservative
there are
Party.
six now. You've forgotten the popcorns.
Right. Some people in the Conservative Party are going to make the point that I initially made, aren't they? Fact. Like, that is not presumptive. That is not, like, they're going to say, look, Reform got those votes. They cost us, basically cost us the seat. We've got to basically subsume Reform into our party. Now, for me, but this is, of course, a reflection of my personal politics, that is the collapse of the Conservative Party. Because I do not believe that anywhere near a majority of the British public believe in the things that the right flank of the Conservatives slash Reform believe in. Now, I understand that, but Reform and that flank of the Conservatives are tapping into a real frustration of some of the things going on in the UK. I think, not to be too simplistic, but we can trace that line back to Brexit. A chunk of that Brexit vote, we know, was about frustration that was dumped on membership of the EU and exploited by the Brexit campaign, that frustration. It's not the only reason but people voted for Brexit, but there was enough people in that group of voters. I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to say. And so here we are. And I think, look, forget the Lib Dems in those seats. They got less than, they just
I
got less than 10% combined in both those seats. They were
mean,
irrelevant in those
when you
seats.
instruct me to forget the Lib Dems, it's actually only ceased to remind me that they exist.
It's, you know, they were irrelevant in those two seats. It's not the kind of seats they're targeting. They're being very targeted about the same, you know, same with the Greens party. They've got 3.4% and 5.8%. It's these three parties in seats like this that matter. And so I think, look, again, it's a reflection of my politics. I think the Conservatives are making a huge mistake tapping into this quote unquote populist kind of narrative. It worked for Boris Johnson to an extent because he's a very unique politician and the people he can speak to cover more people than almost any other politician can. I don't think Rishi Sunak can do that. I don't think Sir
No.
Keir Starmer can do that. I don't think Sir Ed
No.
Davey can do that. I don't think
God,
Richard
no.
Tice can do it.
Who?
The only one that comes close is probably Nigel Farage, but he is a very polarizing figure.
Well, as was Boris, to be fair.
Indeed.
Boris was lucky in that he was also up against an equally polarizing figure who didn't have the populism, or
Indeed.
not the right kind of populism.
Indeed. Yes, you're right about all of that. So we're that's the sort of dynamics we're in, and I think these two seats did give a rather good reflection of that. The type of seats they are, the type of way the results played out, so on and so forth. Now, you and I both have been around politics long enough to know you shouldn't overread what happens in by-elections. They're unique, singular events.
Well, and
But
also, it's also worth noting that the two standing down Tory MPs, one by choice, one very much not so, very, very different. So
Indeed.
one of them resigned because the Tories aren't green enough. The other one's Peter Bone.
Who and there was all sorts of allegations about that he
Well,
denies.
there weren't allegations. There were things that were proven in a parliamentary committee.
Yes, that's right. The report came out as well. He denied it all, but the report
was absolutely damning of his behaviour. But even putting to one side his personal failings, he is, you know, he was very, very active in the pro-Brexit Tories.
Hugely.
A real kind of right-wing pain in the ass guy to successive Tory governments.
Oh, yeah. Like, that was his... Yeah, that was
until I think he got made a minister in those in that hilarious time when Boris Johnson was making everyone a minister. He was like Oprah with the car. You get to be a minister, and you get to be a minister, and you get to be a minister.
One day I'll tell you the story of me following that. But anyway, as that was all playing out,
I was in Canterbury, desperately trying to get my phone charged.
I remember I was sitting in an airport pub. Anyway, yes, so all of that happened. You're absolutely right. But they're two, as you said, but that's the problem, isn't it? They're two very different seats, two very different types of Conservative MP, and the Conservatives got a kicky in both, and we were not surprised. That, to me, is the bottom line of all of it.
Yeah. And it just shows that, unlike idiots like us who pay far too much attention, the public are like, get rid of the Tories. That is the bottom line. The public are absolutely get rid of the Tories. And we can talk, and I can bemoan Labour's 28 billion flip-flop as much as I like, but the trajectory is real, and every single time there's a proof point, it proves that that's the trajectory we're on.
Yeah. And this ended up being a good end to the week for Labour, where it was an absolutely shambolic start to the week for Labour.
Yeah.
There was all the problems with Asif Ali in Rochdale, who made, I would consider them anti-Semitic comments. It was a complete mess.
Yeah, I think Asif Ali's comments were definitely anti-Semitic. If your best defence was he fell for a conspiracy theory, it's not a great defence.
And that's not really... I'm comfortable to talk for you on this. That's not who you, someone falling for a conspiracy theory is the best defence, is who you want as a Labour MP.
No, absolutely not. I think Graham Jones's remarks are more grey area. And I think if Asif Ali hadn't said what he said, I think Graham Jones may have had an easier ride. But by the point that they came out, it was like, okay, you have to go. Because frankly, I've said...
Sorry, Asif Ali, isn't it?
Asif Ali, sorry. Yeah, I've said fucking France, fucking America. I think... Given that one of the things that we drill into people over and over again is that British Jews are not responsible for Israel and its political decisions and its political decision makers. Equally, I don't think you can or should equate the phrase fucking Israel with anti-Semitism, because for the same reasons. I think the stuff about people who fight for the IDF was the more worrying comment. And that, again, William was just literally wrong in the face of the law, because if you have dual nationality, you are likely to be conscripted to do your national service. So that was... But the effing comment that people keep bringing up, I'm frankly don't think is as much of a problem. I think, as I say, I think it's probably right that he won't, that he's been suspended, but I suspect that he wouldn't have been suspended had it not been this week, that meeting, a whole confluence of things coming together.
Okay, so funnily enough, I have a few thoughts on this.
You shock me.
Well, joking aside, this has been a traumatic time for British Jews. We'd only just recovered from, or I can certainly, this is how I felt, I'd only sort of just started to settle after the uncomfortable Jeremy Corbyn year. So it's been a pretty traumatic month for Jews around the world and British Jews. So that's one thing to say. I generally broadly agree with you about your analysis of both those people, frankly. I think the Graham Jones comment, you're right about the thing about dual nationality and Brits serving in the IDF. You're absolutely right about is the more troubling comment. Like, I might just think you're a bit of an arse if you said the first bit.
Yeah.
The bit about dual nationality plays into a deeply, deeply nasty trope.
Yeah, the loyalty, split loyalties. It's Tebbit and the cricket test all over again.
About Jews and their loyalty to Britain or whatever nation they're living, diaspora Jews. It's deeply, deeply troubling. I think the bit that you, I don't think through any, you know, the bit you've skipped over is the bigger narrative around the trauma in the Labour Party about the Corbyn years and how easy that is to set off. And how on a, for me, look, I've spoken to lots of British Jews, friends, whatever, who are going to vote for Labour, who think, look, yeah, Keir Starmer was in Corbyn's front bench, but you know what? He's cleaned up the mess. He's not Jeremy Corbyn. We can give Labour another chance. We've moved on. I don't personally agree with that argument, but I absolutely understand it. But what the start of this week does is bring all the other stuff bubbling up again. And
I mean, Charlotte, I am going to push back ever so slightly on this.
Well, can I finish first?
Sure, but I think it's important.
And the other thing I was going to say is that the bit I'm conflicted about, actually, and I want to be slightly, you might surprise you, slightly generous to Keir Starmer here, is this whole thing of how quickly he could have acted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, he could have got rid of Azhar Ali straight away and possibly should have, but I don't know. I slightly think this thing about, I'm not, so first of all, he could never have stopped Azhar Ali being the official Labour candidate in Richdale. We were
far too late for that.
We were long past the point of no return on that legally, not politically, legally. It was done. So I'm prepared to be slightly generous on the sort of, oh, he should have done it 24, 48 hours earlier. These things are not click of a button. They take time. I can sort of move on from that as well. So there's that. I think what it shows is there is this underlying issue that can flare up at almost any point with the Labour Party because of what happened under Corbyn. I'm not saying, look, we know that Starmer has fixed lots of the institutional problems. I don't want to be, we've had all the ECHR, you know, we've had, sorry, the Equalities Commission stuff, which has moved forward. It showed there has been progress. But there is this underlying issue that can flare up at any point and that the Labour Party has a responsibility really to keep on top of.
So, two things. First of all, anybody who isn't conflicted about what's happening at the moment.
Sorry, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the Middle East. This is not about the Middle East.
But it is. Let's
no, that's always an
ex-
no, that's an excuse.
No, it's not an excuse because we are talking about a party whose Muslim members are currently feeling very conflicted about the leadership of the party. And that's where, you know, it was a meeting with councillors who were talking about leaving the Labour Party. That's where these comments were made. So I don't think we can divorce it from what's happening in the Middle East. And, you know, everybody is conflicted about it, or should be, because it's a conflicting situation. There are incredibly awful things happening to everybody in that either they happened on October the 7th, or they're ongoing because they're a hostage, or they're ongoing because they're a citizen of Gaza who has been asked to move and move and move again, or has been bombed, all of these things are causing pain and emotional conflicts within a party that contains a great many British Jews and British Muslims, many of whom have, if not family, then at least friends, directly on the front lines of these things. You cannot separate these things out. Secondly, yes, Labour went through the most appalling moment of anti-Semitism under Corbyn. And Starmer has done a great deal of work to put that house in order. It was always going to have a few faltery moments. That this faltery moment has been quite so publicly awful is most unfortunate, frankly, for the people of Rochdale, who have, in no part of my lifetime, I believe, had good political representation. You've gone from Cyril Smith, who was himself a paedophile, to Simon Danshook, who got thrown out of the Labour Party for sexting teenagers.
Who's standing in this by-election.
I'm being incredibly unfair to Tony Lloyd, who seems to have been a lovely person, but died having not represented them for that long. And now they've got what? A choice between the guy with the rose next to his name that the Labour Party have disowned, the sexting guy, or George Galloway. Those are the three people most likely to win this election. How appalling for the people of Rochdale, and why, if you were a person of Rochdale, would you not be completely disillusioned with politics? But I think it is worth remembering, for all of the vote clearing that I've just done, that the Tories are not innocent on this either.
And no, sorry, we're not doing the whataboutery.
No, I'm sorry. It's not whataboutery.
It is.
No, it's not. It really isn't. And it's you cannot say, we were faced with a choice between two utterly unacceptable prime ministers, and we chose Boris Johnson, and Labour people have to accept and understand why that happened. But Boris Johnson is an Islamophobic,
so
racist
that's not what we're
man.
Talking about.
I don't care if that's what we are or are not.
I'm happy to
about.
Talk about the Conservative
when?
Councillor.
Because we cannot, every single time we talk about this, we cannot go, it's whataboutery if you say anything about where the Tories are.
What I was going to say is that we can certainly bring in the Conservative councillor who was the mayor. He was a mayor who was disowned by the Conservative Party. He lost the Conservative Party, suspended by the Conservative Party for anti-Semitism this week. Because that's, you know, we're dealing with anti-Semitism in this conversation because that's what happened in the Labour Party. When, unfortunately, I fear it will flare up again in the Conservative Party, Islamophobia. We will certainly talk about that. But I think, I don't think
raising Islamophobia in any party is whataboutery. We are talking, and frankly, it is, you know, anti-Jewish racism is racism. And if we're talking about racism, we shouldn't have a hierarchy of saying, well, we can't talk about anti-Muslim racism because we're talking about anti-Jewish racism.
Oh, no, it's not about a hierarchy. It's just about what's happening in the moment. What I do want to ask you is, as this all flared up at the beginning of the week in the Labour Party again, how do you think British Jews felt?
Oh, I think they felt awful. I mean, I think, to be fair, I mean, I know Mike Katz a little bit,
leads the Jewish Labour movement.
And I think he feels very conflicted because I think he does think the Labour Party has largely done a good and right job in tackling internal anti-Semitism. I think partly there is a problem with it having been factionalised slightly. On both sides. So people say, oh, you're only doing that because it's a left-wing Labour member, or people saying, oh, great, we can get rid of a load of left-wing Labour members. And what they mean or should mean is actually we can get rid of a load of people who are anti-Semitic. And I think it's so hard to talk about the factional element of it because it just sounds like you're either excusing anti-Semites.
I have to be honest.
Or weaponizing anti-Semitism.
I have zero interest in the factionalism of this.
But I'm sure you do, but that's not okay as someone who examines politics.
Well, I'm sitting here as a British Jew who's watched one of our major parties descend, as you put it, most awful incidents of anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
You described it. And so I don't really care what bit of the Labour Party they come from.
I'm sure you don't. But your job here on this podcast, this is not a podcast set up to examine the... There is absolute room for a podcast about the British Jewry experience of politics.
You understand
but
the point I'm
our
making.
Our job is to talk about and to give our insight into politics from an insider outsider perspective.
Yeah, but you understand
so
the point I'm making.
Factionalism is a part of our conversation.
But you understand the point I'm making.
I understand the point you're making, but I'm saying to you that simply trying to say, I'm not interested, don't talk about this, is not a reasonable approach to a podcast that is about examining politics.
I mean, so what factions do Azar Ali and Graham Jones come from?
Well, this is the thing. They're both on the Starmer side. This is part of what's been interesting because there has been a great deal of... consternation from the Corbynite left. Oh, you're just going hard on these people because they're Corbynites,
yeah, I've seen
not
it.
Because they're anti-Semites, blah, blah, blah.
That's certainly what happened at the beginning.
The response with Azar Ali, the flat-footedness, the slowness, has again been said to have been because he was a Starmer. Now, I think, frankly, it was because A, it was too late to get him off the ballot, and B, his biggest opponent is George Galloway. But you can absolutely see how this may look like a double standard to some people, that it took 48 hours rather than being instantaneous.
And didn't more... There was a bit... I slightly may have lost track of it, but there was a bit... There was a sort of rolling bits that came out, and then like a few bits more came out from this meeting, didn't they? And then that's when...
Yes, but let's be honest, that was an excuse, not a reason.
Probably that's true, yeah. I say, I'm slightly prepared, despite myself, to be a little bit generous on how long, quote unquote, it took... for the official support to be pulled, because...
Well, this is the other thing. Everyone's like, Starmer should have X. I don't want a party where one individual can expel or repel anyone. That's not how a process should work. The NEC should absolutely have to be involved in that decision.
Yeah, anyway, I think it leaves... Well... The by-election wins have saved Starmer from a very bad week on all of this. It was a week where we saw the CST, the Community Services Trust, put out a report showing huge escalating numbers of anti-Semitism in the UK since October 7th, which, anyway, we won't get into
that. And in particular, not just since October the 7th, but in the few days immediately following October the 7th.
Correct.
So even before the incursions into Gaza...
war was never the excuse.
Yeah, like, exactly. Really nasty stuff seen as a celebration of what happened October the 7th.
That's exactly right. We've got into so much other stuff, we haven't even had a chance to discuss that Britain fell into recession. So we're going to do that quickly to end the show on a positive note.
Shocked to find that gambling is going on in this establishment.
So it's a technical recession. Gross GDP fell from 0.3% in the last quarter of 2023, making it the sixth successive quarter in which there was a GDP fall, according to the ONS, which means you are technically in recession. Now, the reason we left this to the end is because, frankly, this will have all sorts of political, psychological, and I'm sure economic and financial consequences that I don't understand. But to people in their pocket, Whether the economy had gone up 0.3% or dropped 0.3%, I think barely makes a difference. People are finding it hard in their pockets, and that all that is all that matters. Yeah. We said it when there were quarters that ticked up a little bit, and we'll say it when quarters ticked down a bit. For me, that's the end of it.
Yes and no. It matters because Rishi made economic growth one of his five pledges. So he's broken yet another one of his five pledges.
I want to come on to the politics of it. Go on, finish yours.
But yes, I mean, the much, much bigger, much more important story is that we haven't. It's not whether we go one side or the other of the zero. It's that the zero is constant.
Right.
Have absolutely stagnant growth in this country, and nothing is happening to turn that around.
So let's, yeah, the political consequences for me are, as you say, it's sort of a pledge that's gone. We should note these numbers could be revised, but you still had the headline, Britain in recession.
Yeah. And they're not going to be revised this side of a general election, generally, I think. They might be revised in the summer. But even so, we've had confirmation that the downturn in the quarter before was real.
Indeed. And look, it's just... there's nothing that original to say. It's just showing that they're teetering. They've been teetering for months, one side of the line or the other. This time it's teetered over the edge. It was a slightly bigger drop than was forecast, which is... I think they forecast a drop of 0.1. It was a drop of 0.3, as I say. And it's the stagnation that's the problem. Yeah. Not a tiny recession or a tiny bit of growth. It's stagnant and people are feeling it.
And has been since 2008, basically.
Well, I'm looking at the numbers, the GDP index. It sort of shows bits of growth from January 2008, huge crash in January 2020, you know, in sort of March 2020, of course, things tick back up. And now it's a wobbly line.
But I mean, that stagnant line has been the same since the big economic crash of 2008. And nothing that has happened under this government has fundamentally changed that. In fact, it's fundamentally made it worse.
Just to wrap this up, I was pondering, this is how cool I am, I was pondering during the week which party a recession is worse for, Labour or the Conservatives, because you have Conservatives who put everything on economic credibility. We are the party that will fix the economy. We make the economy good. We hand it over to Labour and they crash it. That's always their narrative.
Yeah.
Labour, deeply sensitive to that narrative, has in recent, you know, Blair years, Brown years, blah, 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 always said, look, we have economic credibility as well. They've even copied conservative spending plans, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't know why, because it's not like the Conservatives are actually economically credible, but there you go.
But then, of course, if there's a recession in the Labour years, Conservatives can go, look, you can't trust Labour with the economy.
Yeah.
So I was just pondering, who is it actually worse for if the economy falls into recession when they're in power? We don't have to know the answer.
It is a funny one. I don't think so. If you look at the 90s, when Labour came to power,
babe, don't remember them.
Oh, shut up. Just because it's my birthday next week, you're being mean.
We won't ask how old you're going to be.
49.
So go on, remind us of the 90s.
In the 90s, the economy was actually growing again after the disaster of the ERM.
Yep.
Which is essentially when the Tories lost the 97 election. It was in autumn 92. They just staggered on for 5 years.
It was a disaster.
But they were... The economy was rebuilding. So I don't know. There's a good phrase, which is that voters don't say thank you, they say what's next.
I think that is a good place to end the show. Emma, where can people keep up with you?
I'm on Substack at Hard Thinking on the Soft Left, and I'm on the various social media platforms at Emma Burnell _.
Head over to theaddition.net for blogs, newsletters, all things tech and media from me. Hair, and I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across most of social media. If you head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast, that's patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast, you can support this show and help us keep going as we hurtle towards a general election. It really would mean a lot. It's just £5 a month and makes a genuinely a huge difference to us if you can do it.
I have an additional thing. I have an album out.
You do have an album out. We'll include the link in the show notes. the point about the Patreon is, yes, it helps us and, you know, independent, free-thinking, female-led political media, I think, is rather important.
And also, look, listen to today. We disagree a lot, and that's really good because, you know, so many other of these female-led podcasts are, oh, you're the prettiest. No, you're lovely. Which we don't do.
I mean, I am lovely, but...
And the prettiest.
I wouldn't agree
with
that.
And clearly, as has already been made very clear, the younger.
But the point is, you know, we haven't got Sky giving us a nice blue check. It does make a difference. In return for your support, we're going to send you both paid versions of our newsletters. And you will also... We're going to do some extra audio, particularly as we get towards general election, local elections. There's going to be a lot to discuss. So we will share some extra audio with you as well. So yeah, that's patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast. We really appreciate your support and we'll see you next week.